Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm your host, Ray Graff. We'll be discussing birds today with our own Rich Guthrie, who is here to help answer your questions about birds. A veteran birder, a former NCON specialist and compiler of the Catskill New York Christmas Bird Count for the National Audubon Society for many years, Rich is our resident avian expert. He's got a blog at blogs.timesunion.com/birding. The number to call for this program is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also comment on the Vox Pop page of our website, wamc.org/voxpop. Check in at Facebook at facebook.com/WAMC Radio. Tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But the number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Rich, welcome back.
Hey, good to be here, Ray.
How is it being a well-known blogger?
Life is good.
Yes?
Well-known. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I have a new purpose for my camera. In fact, I have a new camera for my purpose. So I'm out there working them both.
Now, if you only had the camera the day you saw the mythical woodpecker.
If I did have a camera.
And you didn't get a shot?
No. No. The camera was at my side. And here's the story. We're talking about the ivory-billed woodpecker
right.
that I saw down there in Arkansas while on the search team with Cornell University folks. And the circumstances were that I was working my way through a southern swamp when the thing flew out in front of me. Mm-hmm. And my concern was that if I went to get the camera, it would have kept on going. And if I stood still, it might stop.
Yeah.
It didn't.
So?
It kept on going, and the camera was right where I, by my side.
It's very annoying.
Well,
I have that problem when I see Bigfoot. Never have the camera.
I don't.
No? You don't have that problem?
I don't have that problem.
All right. Well, the number to call is 1-800-348-2551. I have some fears about our phone system.
Okay.
Because the lights aren't lighting up. Our call screener, Patrick Garrett, is in fact taking calls.
We got the calls coming in.
And
that's
a
good thing.
We have two calls up. I don't see any light. So we're going to press the button like the light is lit, and we'll see if, in fact, Amy in Westerlo is there. Is Amy there? Oh, that's bad. Oh, that's right. She is there.
Hello, Amy?
Okay. So, all right. Well, yeah. There's some technical difficulty. Oh, Joe Donahue's here, and he might know something about it.
I doubt that. But
The man on the scene.
Now, ordinarily, Joe, as a vice president of programming, would not bother with this sort of thing. But now he looks like he's a roadie for Leonard Skinner, which is really quite something.
And he is in there.
Yeah, so Amy from Westerlo, you may or may not be on the program, but hang in there. And also Mickey in Mount Tremper and the other people who are calling that we can't see. Donahue, where'd you learn how to do all this stuff?
Where is he?
He's down below the console undoing a cabinet that I didn't even know existed.
He's down in the manhole.
All right. Oh, here comes Pat Cooney, who actually knows quite a bit about this stuff. Hi, Pat. The light's not lit. And, yes.
Okay. My guess would be that this is unplugged.
Okay. All right.
How that would have happened, I don't know.
Okay. Well, this is all very exciting. You know what? It makes sense. If you think about it, Joe, remember on the round table this morning,
Yes. The
on-air light above the console here, above the host chair, is not lit. I wonder if there's a strip down there.
I think you're right. Could you have Pat... This is very fun, by the way.
This is great radio.
Do you...
Come on over. Oh, you want him to go.
If Pat could have bring a screwdriver in when he comes, and he can do this, or I can do this.
Okay. I don't know what that means, Pat, but I don't think it's good. So, Joe, why don't you go? Rich and I'll talk, and then Pat will come in, and then we'll take your calls at 1-800-348-2551.
Here comes the cavalry.
So, Rich, I mentioned your blog, blogs.timesunion.com/birding. And you've got an interesting picture of a sandpiper up there.
Yeah, it was a fun opportunity. I happened to be visiting a pond locally and saw the sandpiper out there. And the next thing you know, that sandpiper had a frog just as big as your fist. A tiny little sandpiper working on us.
It was eating one. It didn't have a friend.
Oh, no. This thing here had a big meal in his mind.
Well, that's great. And so where did you see this sandpiper?
This was down in Greene County, New York. The Greene County, down in Coxsackie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Down at the grassland preserves that we have down there.
So a sandpiper is a it's a water bird?
It's a shorebird.
Yeah.
Right around the edges of a pond, or most people are familiar with them at the edges of the ocean.
And they look like bigger than seagulls, yes?
Negative.
No? What do they look like?
It's about the size of a pigeon.
What are you laughing at? Pat Cooney's on the floor.
Down in the manhole.
Yeah. What are you laughing at, Pat, Vice President of Operations?
Well, you're sitting over me and you're talking about seagulls. You think about it.
Oh, I see. All right. Fair enough. We see these seagulls at when we go up to Maine, and they're huge. They don't look like normal seagulls to me.
They are.
There
is nothing. There is nothing bigger and better about Maine seagulls than New York seagulls.
Oh, really?
We have
Says
them.
You.
We have them all. The ones that are coming through this area may spend the winter out there in the coast of Maine eventually.
Mm-hmm.
They have good fish up in the coast of Maine, and they're working their way up there now.
Fair enough.
I had encountered over the course of my time a duck that had a band on its leg.
Yes.
And through the marvels of modern technology, I was able to read the numbers on that band on that leg and found out that that duck had been banded 14 years prior to that day.
Wow.
Up in Nova Scotia, off the coast of Canada.
Amazing. Now, how long do these things live? That's
well,
14 sounds like a pretty good run.
It is a good, especially for a duck.
Yeah.
There it was. But it just goes to show, this was right near Albany, New York.
Amazing.
And so it just goes to show that these things can wander around. Again, reading the numbers on a band on the leg of a bird through a spotting scope, I was able to find a herring gull, one of our seagulls, as you call them.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Was that some sort of pejorative?
No, not at all. That's
okay.
A generic term.
All right, fine.
But we like to speak in specifics.
I see. Thank you. Pay Pat Cooney. Fix the phones.
Hey, the man. He's emerging.
But let's continue this interesting discussion about numbers on birds.
Yes, the legs of birds.
Thanks, Pat.
Good job, man. And but anyway, to make a long story, the bird was a young bird, a bird of the year, just hatched out earlier in the spring and ended up here in the Hudson River just a few weeks later, having been banded in Minnesota.
Wow. Only takes a few weeks?
That guy was booking.
I'll tell you what.
He needed to get somewhere in a hurry, and he was on his way.
Well, I'm very excited that the phones now work. Let's go to Elizabeth in Brimfield, Mass. Elizabeth, you're on.
Oh, hi. I didn't expect to come on so soon.
Yeah,
well, here you are.
I want to say thank you so much because I really enjoy you, and I like birds. My question is, my husband actually found a feather that's 12 inches long, and I was wondering if I could take a picture of it and send it to you because I can't identify it.
Wow.
Does it have any distinguishing features? Is it one color, multicolor?
No, about 10 inches of it are striped, a sort of brown with a darker brown. At the very end, there's about a 1-inch black band,
mm-hmm.
and then there's some very tan at the very end beyond that black band.
Yes, it sounds to me like I'm going to take a while. And yes, you can send a picture. I'll send an email address in a bit here. And I would encourage you to do that. But it sounds to me like the tail feather of a hawk.
That's very possible. We do have a lot of hawks around here. You think it's a red-tail hawk?
It could be a young red-tail hawk or a Cooper's hawk. It would have to be a fairly large hawk to have a tail feather that size.
Yeah, well, I did measure it, and it is 12 inches.
Okay.
Quite a big feather. So.
Yeah. And here's what's happening. It's not that the bird is losing his feathers for anything other than they do that every year. They replace their feathers one at a time, each and every one of them, at least once a year.
Hmm. I didn't realize that. That's interesting.
Yeah, they don't do all the feathers at the same time, thank goodness, because otherwise they'd be looking...
They couldn't fly.
That's a good point.
Yes.
Well, thanks a lot, Elizabeth. We appreciate the call.
And you're going to put the email address on?
Oh, go ahead with it right now.
Oh, it's quite simple. It's Richard P. Guthrie. @gmail.com.
Okay, @gmail.com.
Right. Richard P. as in Peter Guthrie.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Elizabeth, thanks a lot for the call.
And thank you for having Mr. Guthrie on. He's a joy.
He is a joy.
I love it.
At times more than others. Amy in Westerlo. Amy, you're on.
Hi.
Hello there.
Your timing is perfect today, Rich.
Okay.
This morning, while my son and I were waiting for the bus, we saw a bald eagle
sitting
in a tree. And he got on the bus, and my husband and I got out the spotting scope, and we're watching it. And I went off and did something else, and I came back, and there were two eagles in the same tree.
How cute.
And one of them was noticeably larger than the other.
Yes, she was.
Ah.
Okay, she was. That's what I thought.
Yes, and you're quite accurate in that, Amy. The with hawks and owls, for some reason, females are larger, substantially larger than the males.
But that's an eagle.
With hawks, any eagles, hawks, owls.
Oh, I see.
Any of that genre.
Okay.
And the reason for that is anybody's guess and some good scientific theories, but who knows? May have something to do with the procurement of food, that the female has to be in a stronger ready mode for the procurement of food for the young if something should happen to the male. But nature doesn't count on the loss of the male in the process of raising the young. So there is a reason. It's consistent throughout the raptor group, but there you have it. The female is larger than the male.
And the eagles are fair. I mean, that's what Westerlo's not really near any great body of water, right?
Well, no. Westerlo.
There's a lot of small bodies.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are. And eagles can move around. And this time of year, they'll be searching for a good source of winter food. And they do wander. The alcove reservoirs out that way.
Yeah, that's true.
The Franklintown Vlie, where there is an eagle nest, is out that way. And so there's all sorts of possibilities. But I congratulate you, Amy. That's a very good observation, and thank you.
Thanks a lot for the call. Let's take a break here. Zach, it's one of those days. Zach, the engineer's not even. Oh, there he is.
Yeah.
Okay, the lights work. Zach's there. We'll take a break. 1-800-348-2551. Wow, it's an eventful beginning of the show, eh, Rich?
Here we go.
All right.
Support for WAMC comes from Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Quarry and fabrication used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking. Rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires. AshfieldStone.com. And Boyden & Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts. Providing foreign and domestic car, truck, and SUV repair services and a Massachusetts inspection station for over 50 years. BoydenAndPerrin.com.
Hey, thanks everybody who pledged during the fund drive. As you may know, we got it done yesterday. Gosh, I don't know, just about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And so nice to hear from everybody, including several who called in support of Rich Guthrie.
Well,
surprisingly, none of them were named Rich Guthrie, which I thought was amazing. Anyway, it's burning today. Rich Guthrie is here. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Back to the working phones we go. It's Bill and Ravina. Bill.
Hi. Congratulations on raising $1 million.
Hey, thanks a lot.
And my question is, in my quest to get a good picture of a pileated woodpecker, I was home one day, and I heard the woodpecker. I went out, and I saw three pileated in a tree. And then they took off, and then they stopped 50 yards or so, and then they hung out for a while. And I kept doing this, like, three iterations of just swooping around and hanging out for a while. I was always under the impression that pileated were very territorial. So my question is what do you think they were doing?
That's a good question, and I think what's going on is that they were probably the young siblings of the same nest brood or parent and offspring, and a combination of that. And right now they're sorting out who's going to spend the winter in your backyard.
Oh, okay.
And so one or two will get booted out, the other ones will stick around. And as far as the woodpecker flying business is concerned, you know, most birds use their tail as a stabilizer, as a rudder.
Yeah.
And woodpeckers having that stiff, pointy tip tail that they do don't have that same ability, don't have that same skill set. And so what they're doing is they're bouncing through the air. It's a combination of fly, fly, fall. They fly up, they fall down. They fly up, they fall down. So it gives you this roller coaster ride of a woodpecker flight that's out there. They wish they could smooth it out, but then they wouldn't be able to prop up against the tree like they do.
Yeah. Well, that's amazing. I see them fly in formation, too, because it was almost like they had a rhythm going.
Ah, yeah. Chances are, it sounds to me like it's a little territorial establishment, so that the winter's coming on, and they need to figure out who's going to spend the winter working your woods and where the other one or two are reluctant to leave, but sooner or later they're going to have to.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Bill, thanks a lot for the call. You know, you mentioned the winter coming on, and in all the mayhem right before the show, you had mentioned something about wayward birds and birds that sort of just found their way here.
Well, here's what's happening. A lot of young birds are migrating for their first time. Most of them get it. They have no problem. They start up in the Adirondacks of New York or the Berkshires and end up in Cuba or Venezuela or Panama, Costa Rica. Mm-hmm. They're on their way, and they do a good job of getting there. But oftentimes you'll find one or two that go the wrong way. They don't quite get it. And just the other day, down in that same place where I saw that sandpiper working over the frog, mm-hmm. which is in my
Green
blog
County.
Post,
yep.
I happened to be checking the same woodlot, and there was a flycatcher, a kingbird, that's normally found west out in the prairie states and beyond.
Mm-hmm.
Very rare to see one on the East Coast, and usually that's down along the coastal strip of the outer beaches. But here was one right in the Green County of New York.
Now, will it find its way back? Or
Don't know.
Will it try? Does it know I'm in the wrong spot?
It may not know enough to go to work its way back to Montana where it belongs. And It happens, you know. These are the pioneers. These are the ones that may be the forerunners of a new expanded population of the species. He may do quite well in New York State, or Massachusetts, or Connecticut, and we see this happen time and again. It takes a long time, and it's a lot of chance and luck involved. But there you have it.
Well, you've spoken about populations of birds that you remember from when you were a kid. And there aren't so many now, and maybe there are more now of a certain kind of bird that weren't around when you were a kid. So it takes 20, 30 years for these sort of migrations, the changes in habitat?
And that's at fast forward, too.
Really?
Yes. I mean, in a normal sequence of events. For example, the songbirds at the Galapagos or the songbirds on the Hawaiian Islands, we're talking millennia that have passed before a bird population can somehow become established on a remote island.
Well, that's
like
different.
No, it's not, because the same thing can happen in the Northeast, where you'll have a vagrant songbird from the West, let's say, that shows up in the East. If he or she doesn't find a mate in time, then that effort, that experiment, will go for naught.
Right.
And on the other hand, if, chance should happen that he sings his song and lo and behold, here comes a female of the same species and they suddenly decide they're going to make a nest there and all the young survive and find suitable conditions and they keep returning to the same site, then they could establish a colonial population. And that happens. That's why we have many bird species that you can trace their heritage to the Old World, to Europe or Asia. They've established in North America, and we have one-of-a-kind species for a family that's normally found elsewhere.
Very interesting. We go to the phones once again. Patricia in Walden, I believe. You're on.
Hi. I have a question about bird behavior. This was back in July, and I was on a rail trail bicycling,
mm-hmm.
and along the edge of the trail, I saw this kind of reddish-brown shape, and I thought initially it was a groundhog, but when I got closer, I saw that it was actually three birds, and there was a bird in the middle, and then one on either side of it, and it looked like the two on either side were pecking the bird in the middle's back. But it didn't seem like a fight. It just seemed like, they were doing it a favor.
Oh, hmm.
And they looked, when I got back, I looked up in my book, and it looked like it might have been a brown thrasher.
They were quite large, very brownish. And I've never seen that kind of behavior before. I was just curious.
Well, can I ask you what month that might have, that was?
It was in July, I think.
Okay. Well, that makes me think that it was probably a parent and two young. And the two young were begging for a meal. And the parent was probably trying to teach them to get your own meal. It's time you learned how to do this yourself. And
because they all looked about the same size, though.
Yeah, that's no problem. Birds, when they leave the nest, are generally the same size as the adults. That's they get as big as they're going to be, and that's it. So they all look pretty much the same size. And with brown thrashes, if that's what they were, the only way you really can tell the difference is the color of the eye. So they will look like, they will all look alike from a distance. And so I suspect that's probably babies that were begging.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Oh, quite
Patricia,
welcome.
Thank you very much. Rich Guthrie is our guest. It's the Bird Show on Vox Pop. First one after the fun drive, 1-800-348-2551. Jack in Highland, New York. Jack, you're on.
Hi, Rich. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I had a very interesting experience earlier in the summer, and fortunately my wife and daughter got to see it too, so that nobody thought I was crazy. But I'm normally used to doves being kind of skittish, and you know, if you get too close to them, they sort of fly away. But we had at sometimes two and sometimes three, but it started with one, these unbelievably tame, and I'm looking at my Audubon right now, and I think there were mourning doves, but incredibly tame. I mean, to the point where we would be sitting on the patio and they would come and roost on the chair behind my daughter and hop along and, you know, back down onto the ground and sort of pick. And at one point, one even walked between my legs. We all thought it would be like, well, maybe they're in a suicide pact.
No.
But unbelievably tame. I mean, well, within 18 inches of.
Yeah, I get it. I think what it was is somebody's pet birds had gotten away, and they thought you were their source of the next meal.
Even a wild dove like that?
Well, I don't think they. It doesn't. I suspect rather than mourning doves, they might have been turtle doves or something very similar to a mourning dove that might have been kept in captivity. Or are you sure they weren't something of a similar dove other than mourning doves?
No, I'm not.
Okay. All right, then. That's probably what it was. Is that somebody had hand-raised some one of those types of doves that you can get in pet shops or what have you, and raise them in captivity, and they become imprinted on people types. And
these guys just kept dropping in, you know, like friends, you know, dropping in for a cup of coffee or something.
Yeah,
you know?
And they people do keep birds like that, and if they do get away, they will associate people with food, so they'll be back again for the. You know, looking at you as though you were the person who they identified with earlier.
Very.
That's just a wild guess on my part, but
right.
For native wild bird species, that's very unusual and it's very unlikely to happen.
They normally are quite skittish.
And they are. And they are. They were raised by somebody who became somewhat dependent on, and they had identified you with them.
Jack, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it very much. Some breaking news here. It just passed along by Ian Pickus. According to the U.S. Capitol Police, the U.S. Capitol is in lockdown. Reports of gunshots and an injured Capitol Police officer. It's all we have right now, but we're following this for you, and we'll have updates as they come in, and NPR will have more this afternoon. U.S. Capitol Police saying the Capitol is in lockdown. Reports of gunshots and injured Capitol Police officer. With that said, bearing in mind,
we need more peace doves.
We need more peace doves. Let's go back to the phones and carry on as usual. John in Clinton. John, you're on with Rich Guthrie.
Yeah, hi, Rich. Got a question for you. Do ducks roost in trees?
Yes. And a
do
couple
they?
Of
really?
Yeah, a couple of them actually nest in trees. The wood duck is the most notable example of that. It gets its name because that's where they nest. They're in the woods, in a hole in a tree, an old hollow. And there are several other ones, especially up your way. You might have the mergansers will nest in a hole in a tree as well.
Yeah, but this was at our church just east of Millbrook. One day, I forgot when it was. I'm standing under this large maple tree, a large old maple, and all of a sudden these little ducklings start falling out of the tree, about a half a dozen of them.
That's right. That sounds like wood ducks. And
okay.
That's quite a phenomenon to watch. Not many people ever get to see that, but every wood duck that you see out there was raised in a cavity of some sort. Some of them in the holes of in the hollow of a tree.
Well, and it's a small tree, so I'm sure it has a hollow in it. It's just, you know, I said, yeah, you stand and all of a sudden it's raining ducks. I mean,
yes, quite comical too. I've seen that one time myself, and the little guys. You know, they have to make a plunge of faith to get out, and they can't fly yet. They can the best they can do is flutter their tiny little wings as fast as they can, but I don't know that that does any good.
Wow, no. They just plopped straight down and then ran right in under the shrubbery close by.
That's where Mother was watching from.
Ah, well, that's very interesting. Jack, thanks a lot for the call. That's cool. So you get to see ducks fall out of trees.
Little ducklings. And I saw that one time, and it is kind of comical, but, you know, it's risky business on their part because they have to drop 20, 30 feet, and they hit the ground with a bounce.
Yeah.
They're like a little ping pong ball.
But there's not much mass there, so they're probably fine.
And they have a soft belly that, you know, somehow is ready to absorb the one of them ended up on its back upside down. You can see his little feet going in the air. He managed to get straightened out. Then the mother duck was over in the shoulder and gave a couple of beep, beep, beep calls, and they all lined up like Madeline in the book there. You
sure,
know?
Yeah.
They all lined up and went scurrying right across the road into the little shrubbery, and off they went.
Amazing. Let's go to Norm in Upton. Norm, you're on.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Okay.
I've got an unusual problem. Usually everyone wants to see the eagles in the Northeast. I don't want to see them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They managed to empty all the koi out of my koi pond.
Oh,
this past summer.
Yeah.
They had a feast on.
I'm sure they did.
Japanese koi, and I was heartbroken to see Japanese koi, you know, an orange fish getting hauled away underneath a bird.
You can't blame the eagle on that.
I know. I put up scarecrows and aluminum foil, and I'll tell you what, those birds could care less about anything I did. All they cared about.
They couldn't resist.
They couldn't resist. I mean, they didn't bother the sunfish or any of the native fish they had in the pond, but the Japanese koi were just too much of a temptation.
Well, do you ever notice the difference between the speed of a sunfish and the speed of a koi? I mean, easy pickings.
Yeah, go for the easiest, the low-hanging fruit, as it were. Yeah.
The other problem is the koi are, you know, fish in colors and right sunbathing by the surface.
Yes.
Is there any other commotion that I could cause or anything else, other type of scarecrow, anything I could put up that they would deter them from hanging out there?
Well, some of the fish aquaculture farms, the fish farms down south, will put netting over the top of their ponds to keep the herons and eagles and ospreys from feasting on their fish.
But that's not good if you have it as an ornamental pond, let's say, and you want to look at the beauty of it. That doesn't work.
There's a half-acre natural pond. It's kind of too big for that.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. No, I can enjoy the sunfish, though.
Well, all right. Now, that's not very helpful.
No.
Right. No.
Sorry about that.
I mean, it's very hard to steer an eagle away from a delectable-looking fish.
There's some very fat and happy eagles flying around Columbia County now, I'm sure.
And they'll be back.
Wow. Okay.
No more purchasing koi and hand-feeding them, I guess.
That's right. Find cheaper fish. I think that's the way to go.
sell lawn seeds to eagle feeding on my property. I guess I could do that.
I bet Guthrie would be there. Hey, Norm, thanks a lot for the call.
All right, thanks, guys.
Okay.
1-800-348-2551. So there's no way to take an eagle off his feed
if you're going to be putting out, you know, the those colorful red fish, my God.
Yeah.
red and white, and they just, and like he says, they feed on the surface. They feed, you know, bubbling right up there in
sure.
the top.
Sure. Easy, easy pickings.
Yeah.
Claudia in Newburgh, you're on. Claudia.
Oh, hi. I was wondering, I've been feeding the birds for a long time, many, many years, and just the last couple of years now, I've had a problem because the sparrows came in flocks, and they proceeded to kick all the sunflowers out of the feeder, and now I have a neighborhood flock of pigeons that are underneath, and they're just dominating to such a degree the food. I go through maybe 5 or 6 50-pound bags of sunflowers in a season.
Wow.
A lot, because I have a lot of birds. And now I'm feeding pigeons and house sparrows, and I just don't know if there's any hope.
Well, that sort of takes the fun out of it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well,
I'm thinking of not doing it for a year, holding off for a year.
Well, they might well be back. Even if you do that. So why deprive yourself? What I can suggest is change the type of feeder and food that you're providing. And go for the thistle seed with the small openings and the little perches that the goldfinches will
like. Well, that's what I'm using. I'm just doing thistle now.
Oh, okay.
And I'm doing suet, of course, for the...
And suet, right.
Yeah, but as far as, you know, the jays and cardinals and all the titmice and...
Those nice guys.
They love their sunflowers.
Yes, right. Well, so do the pigeons and sparrows. And
so I guess I have to forget about that then.
Well, and there are kinds of feeders out there that will accommodate only the smaller birds. But if the sparrows are making a mess of it and, you know, and tossing the seed down where the pigeons can get them, they're kind of working together against you,
right,
aren't they?
Right, right. Okay, well, I just thought maybe there was some answer, like maybe stopping for a while or something.
Well, you could, but keep the thistle and suet going. And if you have a hummingbird feeder,
I have two of those.
Keep those going too, because as we were talking earlier, these vagrant western birds that wander around and end up on the East Coast could very well include hummingbirds. That
We might get a rufous in my backyard if I'm lucky.
A rufous hummingbird, exactly, and that's what you know we're keeping an eye out for.
All right, Claudia, thanks a lot. We got to take a break here. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop. Rich Guthrie is our guest, and we hit the home stretch coming up.
For WMC comes from the Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, protecting New York's historic buildings, districts, and landscapes since 1974, preservenys.org, and Alfondre Architecture, specializing in green building design and construction, as in a new LEED office building now under construction in New Paltz, creating spaces and places of lasting beauty, alfondre.com.
Once again, thanks to everybody who chimed in and ponied up for the fun drive. It's over, and we're back to regular programming. It's our first fun drive Vox Pop, and we welcome you all back. Rich Guthrie is our guest, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Some breaking news we're following at this hour. Police say the U.S. Capitol has been put on a security lockdown amid reports of possible shots fired outside the building. People standing outside the Supreme Court across the street from Congress were hurried into the court building by authorities. In a notice distributed by email, the U.S. Capitol Police advised everyone to, quote, close, lock, and stay away from external doors and windows. The notice said gunshots have been reported on Capitol Hill. There are unconfirmed reports of an officer injured. We're following this for you, and we will have updates as needed, and NPR will be following the story as well throughout the afternoon. Again, the number to call, 1-800-348-2551. Ron in Amherst, Mass. You're on, Ron.
Hi. Observation about a turkey.
Okay.
Had a hen turkey in my yard, and I managed to get within about a foot and a half of it.
Mm-hmm.
And his vision was totally, it didn't have any peripheral vision because his head was covered in warts. Huge, like quarter inch. And is that unusual to have turkeys with growths all over their head? I mean, the whole unfeathered part was actually covered in, like, large warts. And it had seemed to have even obscured his vision, which is why I got so close to it, you know?
Well, I hear what you're saying, and I yes, it is unusual. And while turkeys do have wart-like features on their bare skin on the head, especially the tom turkeys.
Well, this was definitely a hen, you know? But they were very big. I mean, they had turkeys in the yard, lots of them, you know, but I've never seen anything like this before.
It definitely sounds like an abnormality, some malady that the turkey was suffering. And without seeing it, I wouldn't be able to tell you exactly what it is, it's probably some infection or growth that's affecting the bird. And given if it has reduced vision, it's probably, unless it can get over that situation, it's going to fall easy prey to some raptor of some sort. If that doesn't happen and they can find food, it probably will continue on. But it does sound like some growth of some sort. It could be an infection caused by, let's say, a thorn that has embedded in the skin on the head. So
there were lots of them. There must have been like 30 or 40, you know. I mean, it was just the whole bear part was covered, you know.
I'm wondering if he got tangled up with a porcupine that might have given him a quick swipe with the tail. And I don't know if you've ever taken a close look at porcupine quills, but they have a harpoon-like tip to them that keeps digging in rather than falling out. And unless you have somebody handy that can pull them out, they can be life-threatening.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, thanks, Ron. I had no idea that there were many porcupine about.
Oh, yeah, there are.
I've never seen one.
Oh, check the shoulder of the road. I mean, you know, unfortunately, that's a pretty good census technique.
Yeah.
And quite often you'll see porcupines that are roadkills. But they are out there, and especially if you get up into elevation in our area.
Yeah.
In the Berkshires or the Catskills or the Adirondacks, you will find porcupines. And, you know, porcupines are I don't want to call them dumb, slow-moving little critters, but they just have their way of moving around.
Yeah.
Probably got too close to a turkey nest. The turkey was defending the eggs of babies, and the porcupine was defending itself.
Yeah. All right. Makes sense. Let's go to Ed in Glenmont. How are you, Ed?
Pretty good.
You're on.
So here's the question. We have kind of in a suburban area with a lot of old and medium growth trees and vegetation. And there's been cardinals around for many years in the yard and so on. And but I was wondering if you could possibly provide some insight. We've had a couple instances of cardinals nesting, either in the ivy on the garage,
mm-hmm.
or in the shrubs, tall shrubs near the house or in between the homes. And on at least two occasions, the fledglings apparently either disappeared. Because they were gone after hatching within a week, and I don't think they take to flight that soon, and we never saw any, you know, practice flying, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And in the last instance, there was actually a dead fledgling in the nest, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think's going on? The cats? I'm not saying there's no cats in the area, but they'd have no way to climb the ivy or even these shrubs. What would have caused, for example, the little one there to have died and been left in the nest?
Well, infant mortality in birds in general is very, very, very high. It's almost like 75%
Wow.
of young birds will not make it to adulthood. It's a very precarious time period for them. They're very helpless. For the most part, they depend on the parents for protection and for food. And a lot of things could go wrong along the way, including predation. And it may be cats or could be other types of predators. You know, even a little chipmunk is an opportunist, and if it can latch on to a baby bird in the nest or an egg, they will do that. Squirrels are notorious for their predation, as well as other possibilities. So there's a whole realm of things that could go wrong with a nesting pair of cardinals that might affect the young. It's hard to say what might do it, but many times, too, is that these young birds, when they leave the nest, will seek a secure place where they'll go to, and the parents will go to them to bring food. So they may just disappear from sight, but be okay someplace nearby elsewhere.
How long typically from hatch to flight, at least in the case of the cardinals, is it about 2 weeks?
More like a month.
Really, that long?
Yeah. I mean, until they start showing up on their own. And
right.
Yeah.
Well, that's quite a long time of, let's
vulnerability.
Say,
yeah.
And and also training and, you know, monitoring by the parents. It's really that long for a cardinal?
Yes, something along those lines. From when the egg hatches out, and then they can stand on the edge of the nest until when they can fly away and move around on their own accord.
Understood.
Right.
Just a quick follow up. In this instance, I'm almost certain that the nest could not have been reached either by squirrels, chipmunks, or cats.
Because
again, it was in the ivy along the garage. I mean, there was nothing to hang on for any of these possible predators. What other explanation? I mean, could it be crows possibly, or blue jays?
Blue jays, crows are a good candidate. Crows are a little reluctant to come that close to a house, but
right.
But you're right on with the blue jays. So they are predators, and even something like a grackle will go in and raid a nest. So, you know, birds, it's a jungle out there, and these guys are all out there.
Now, just a dead one in the nest itself without being eaten. What about that?
Well, there are a number of causes from natural mortality from one cause or another. You know, an illness or exposure to some sort of a virus might take a toll, or something might affect the parents that caused them to abandon the nest, or perhaps even themselves abandon the area.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Ed, we're going to move it along here, but thank you very much for the call. Let's go over to John in Albany. John, you're on.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hi. I'm looking up to take lunch in a park, and there's a pond there, and I've been doing this for a while, and only lately in the last week have I noticed a whole bunch of ducks in the pond. And they're deep diving into the pond and spending 3, 4, 5 seconds underwater. And them being underwater that long, I don't think is all that unusual. But I'm wondering why all of a sudden they hadn't been doing it, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago, and now they seem to be deep diving and doing it frequently and sequentially, you know, 3 or 4 times in a row.
Are these your typical park-type mallard ducks? Or
correct, the mallard, and then, yes, and then females. And, yep.
Yep, okay. Although the books will say that mallards and black ducks and gadwalls and pintails are puddle ducks or dabbling ducks, every now and then you'll get a bunch that will learn to dive, that they can swim underwater and find food down there, and that's what's got them going. I think it's a learned behavior. It starts out by see what Joe's doing over there. Let's give that a try. And
right.
So they all go to the edge and jump off and dive underwater and find food. So I think...
Well, why not 2 weeks ago? Why not a month ago? It seems like they're just doing it in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, a good question. I don't have a good answer for you other than that Joe over there tried it for the first time, liked it, and the rest of them saw him and liked it too. That's
so
a simplistic...
Yeah, this could have been learned just in this past couple of 3 weeks by this group of ducks.
Yes. It spread.
Wow.
The word got out and it spread quickly.
Yeah.
It's not normal, but it is quite. You will find it quite often out there, and I don't think it's a natural part of their life cycle to go
right.
through a diving for food stage. Now, the
right.
other possibility is that they're undergoing their molt right now, and
wow.
their flight abilities are somewhat limited. So maybe you're onto something there. That is that during this molt period. They rely on diving for food rather than flying around and finding food in other places. So they might have exhausted the available food supply, and I'm working on that supplemental submergent vegetation.
Well, let's get some video of that, John, and send it over to Rich.
I will do that. The only other observation or the only other comment I make is I thought possibly it was exercise in anticipation of migration. Just a thought.
I like your thinking. Let's expand on it.
All right. John, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. Rich Guthrie is our guest. We're going to go over to Ralph and Saugerties. Ralph, you're on.
Hi there. Thanks for letting me get my word in. I called last year about bats. I like bats. You know, they get rid of all my mosquito problem and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we were worried about the white nose syndrome.
Sure. Yes.
And I'm happy to report they all came back. In fact, more came back this year than last year.
I'm happy for you and the two of us.
Right, but I have a question. They seem to come later and left earlier. Like, are they in hibernation already?
No, not likely.
Not likely. So I cleaned the house, maybe, you know, and they still stayed there. Even while I was cleaning it with a spray hoser, the spray wash, but they stayed there, and they were there another week. I just wondered if something made them leave.
I don't know. When you say you spray them with a hose or a sprayer or something?
I clean the side of the house and I stayed away from them, you know, and, you know, they seem to weather it fine, you know, kind of got rid of a lot of their, you know, detritus. And they were there another week and then they're gone. So I hope I didn't hurt them in any way.
Well, I don't know. I've never heard of such a thing. But what, it could be that they've moved to a winter herbiculum to have gone to hibernation early. What kind of bats did you say they are? They have you determined?
I can only see them. They're behind the shutters, so I can see them like their nose. You know, they're like little tiny bats.
Okay.
And all right.
So they might have. I'm hoping they went to hibernation early because of the weather pattern or something. I don't know.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. I will pose the question to my bat expert friends and see if they have an explanation. And stay tuned. We'll see if we can come up with something for you.
Great idea. Rich Guthrie is our guest. Pat in Holyoke. Pat, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I'm calling because a friend gave me a birdhouse for a gift, and I don't know the first thing about what time of year to put it up, where best to hang it, what I should expect to see.
What size birdhouse is it?
It's a pretty small birdhouse with just one small hole.
Okay. And your neighborhood, you have a backyard or a...
Yeah. Okay. Yes, and I do. I have a couple bird feeders out. I have a long thistle feeder, and then just another feeder that I just sort of put standard stuff in.
My suggestion is put it right out there because some birds will use a nest box through the winter for a little communal.
Oh,
they'll stay together and stay warm.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Oh, good. I was thinking I maybe should wait till spring.
No. Go for it right now. And then... And as springtime comes, I hope you have a chance to have a look at it. And if it needs some cleaning out, you can do that as the birds want to come in for nesting.
And just let them put the nesting material in it and everything?
Yes. Leave that part to them.
Great. Oh, great. Well, thank you so much. I'm excited.
Okay, Pat. Good luck with it.
Another satisfied customer. Thank you, Pat. Melissa in Austerlitz. Melissa.
Hi. My question is about what to do in this particular situation if you find baby birds on the ground. I was outside of a nursing home and saw on the grass there were three baby birds with their mouths wide open. Their feathers were still wet. I looked up in the large tree, and the nest was crooked. It looked like, you know, there was a lot of wind just previously, and it looked like they fell out of the tree because of the wind. I was unsure if I should put them up in the nest. I was afraid I was going to be dive bombed by the bird. Wasn't sure if, you know, it's true, the old wives' tale not to touch birds. Mothers don't go near them.
Right. Okay.
You know?
Well, that old country tale part is not true. You can pick them up. And if they were in a helpless state, in other words, before they could stand on their own feet and move around on their own, then by all means, put them back up in the nest if you can. safely. And don't worry about the parent birds; they'll get excited, but they're not going to
abandon
hurt you in any fashion. No, and they won't abandon the babies. Birds don't do that.
Okay.
And they have a very strong attraction to where the babies are in the nest or on the ground. But on the ground, they're subject to all sorts of hazards. Better off up in the nest. If you can help them do that, that'd be great.
Okay. So do the birds, once they're out of the nest, the parents can never put them back up, right?
No.
They're
on the ground like that. They're on their own and probably will not survive.
All right.
Okay.
Melissa, we're all done. Thank you for being the last one today. We appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Bye. And thanks to everybody who called in today. Sorry if you didn't make it through. We apologize for that. Rich, always a very popular guest here on the program. And he has a blog. It's blogs.timesunion.com/birding. And once again, Rich, your email address?
RichardPGuthrie@gmail.com.
All right, Rich Guthrie, thanks for being here. We'll see you next month. Thanks to you for calling in and for listening. Thanks again to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Thanks to our intern, Patrick Garrett, for answering the phones. Tom Jobe is our web assistant today on the program. Our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. It's Moyers & Company tomorrow at this time on Medical Monday next week. Orthopedist Dr. Gerald Ortiz will be with Alan Shartok. Support comes from Washington County Tourism, presenting the Battenkill Classic and Challenge this weekend, a prelude to the tour of the Battenkill and the Southern Adirondack Fiber Festival, featuring vendors, animals, and more, WashingtonNYCounty.com. And Union Institute and University, Brattleboro, Vermont, offering a master's concentrating in counseling psychology, one weekend per term and online, myunion.edu for applications. I'm Ray Graff. Thanks for being here today. Stay tuned for a news update.